Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams, and now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this Thursday, November the 17th, 2020, 16 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into WWGH Radio, and as many of you know, we are in a very crucial time in this country when it comes to the pandemic, COVID-19 coronavirus, which we have been facing since March. The numbers are at an all-time high. People are getting sick. Hospitals here in Ohio and around the country are starting to really get overrun for the first time. Governors are wondering what to do, trying to impose laws. Today, our governor, Mike DeWine, will have a press conference at 2 o'clock where he says he's going to try to enact a slowdown, not a shutdown this time. The holidays are ahead of us. Thanksgiving right around the corner, Christmas after that, New Year's after that, and currently 247,000 plus people dead in this country this year from COVID-19, approaching a quarter million people. What do we do during the holidays? Is the government going to do anything in the states? It's been left up to the states the whole time. What might they do? What can they do? Do masks matter? Is that what this is all about? A lot of stuff to talk about today as we are joined by one of my favorite people and a gentleman who has been with us throughout this entire predicament. And that's a light word to use. Predicament to describe COVID-19. I think since the first week this broke out back in March. He's a best-selling author. You probably remember him best as the official medical correspondent on the Today Show for so many years, the legendary, my pal, Dr. Art Uihlein. Dr. Uihlein, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. I'm even better than I was 5 minutes ago. Nobody's ever called me legendary before. I thank you.
Dr. Uihlein, here we are. We are now 8 months into this. Things you would think would be better. We've given people the information. We've made mask mandates in certain states, and the numbers are at an all-time high. Why?
Well, there are several reasons why. One reason is because we have chosen in this country to adopt a state-by-state strategy instead of a national strategy. And there have been two issues that created. One is that there's been a difference in the response state by state across the country. And indeed, some states are not facing a crisis right now. They have been not locked down, but cautious and in a preventive mode since the very beginning. And although their COVID cases are climbing, it's nowhere near what's happening in Ohio. I looked at the curve for Ohio, and there is a catastrophic rise occurring right now. There were almost 8,200 cases on Friday, which is many, many times more than you had just a month or two ago. And no one knows where that's going to stop. So the state-by-state, the difference in state-by-state management and the failure to adopt a national policy has resulted in a laxity, and the way we dealt with this problem in many states. The second problem is that the states were literally pitted against each other in competing for essential materials, for tests, for PPE, the protective equipment, right down to vials and hospital supplies. And some states have fared well, particularly where the hospital systems are large and powerful and could afford to stockpile ahead of time, and some states have not fared well. We have failed to invoke the National Defense Protection Act, which would have allowed tens of millions, hundreds of millions of masks to be made and distributed. Some public health experts had suggested that we would see a fraction of the deaths today if our government had simply made a billion masks and sent two or three or four to every single household in the country. So that's one critical problem, I think, the failure to have a national policy. Another problem has been the failure of citizens to do their part. And some of this just has to do with the nature of who we are. You know, we're human beings. We don't like to be regimented, and we don't like to be told what to do. I heard you on the news. You just talked about someone who was in an auto accident and severely injured, who knows, may die, because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. I mean, for crying out loud. Wear a seatbelt, right? What's the deal there? We're not infringing on your liberty. We're trying to keep you alive. But that's human nature. That's just who we are. And some folks don't want to go along with it. The problem has been greatly exacerbated by the politicization of mask wearing. It is so clear now that there would be 100,000 more people alive in this country, 100,000 people alive, had we simply reached a 90% level of mask wearing across the United States instead of the 49% level that we were seeing most of the time. It's creeping up now as people are finally beginning to get it. But this prediction was made, you may recall, way, way back when the University of Washington predicted that there would be somewhere between 60,000 and 240,000 dead by November 1st. 60 to 240,000. And when that came out, I said, huh? I mean, what kind of a guess is that? It wasn't a guess at all, Scott. They predicted that there would be 60,000 dead if 90% of Americans wore face masks and distanced by 6 feet. And that if they failed to do that, if only 50% of Americans did that, there would be 240,000 dead. What did we have on November 1st? We had 225,000 dead because America hit the bottom mark, 49% for face mask wearing instead of the high water mark. So and now we're beginning to hear of pandemic fatigue. People are saying, oh, I'm so tired of wearing my mask. Well, that's insanity. It's just insanity because these cases, now that it's getting colder and we're going to be forced indoors more, the risk is getting higher and higher and higher. And I beg your listeners, wear your mask everywhere. Wear your mask anytime you are indoors and exposed to other people who have been exposed to other people. Some people say, oh, I don't have to wear my mask indoors. I can do anything I want because I'm only at home exposed to my family. But what if one of your family members is in an occupation that exposes him or her to many, many people? The big problem with this disease is that such a large portion of those who get it are asymptomatic. They have no symptoms. So they are capable of infecting you without even knowing that they're sick. So I beg your listeners, this from now on, wear your mask, distance. Don't have large gatherings, particularly indoors. And you may recall some of the very basic fundamentals we discussed way back when, based on that wonderful epidemiologist's paper, Scott Bromwich, who pointed out that your risk is much higher indoors. Your risk is much higher over time. So if you are indoors with three other people for an hour, your risk is so much greater than if you're indoors with them for a minute. And if you're walking past someone on the street outdoors, there's almost zero risk. And if you're jammed into a small church where there's no good air circulation and everybody is singing at the top of their lungs, your risk is very, very high. So these are just common sense issues, and I beg people. It's everybody's worried about this Thanksgiving, and I think we should be more worried about Thanksgiving 2021 and who will not be alive in your family to celebrate that one with you. Our family, which traditionally has a huge Thanksgiving dinner, we invite everyone who's alone. And, you know, my wife and I are in our 80s. We have a lot of people, a lot of friends who are alone. They're widows and widowers, travelers. And our normal Thanksgiving is 20 people, 25 people. We will be down to six in my daughter's backyard, distanced, and we are required to wear a mask if we go into her house. And there's another person there. My daughter's a doctor. Her husband's a physician also. And we cannot go in her house with another person in the house unless we wear a mask. So that's what's going on, Scott. And I think people are finally starting to understand this is about survival.
Dr. Euleen, here in Ohio, this has been kind of a bizarre week, and it's going to continue today, and we're going to see what happens. But what essentially happened here, and I understand the economics of this. In the beginning, our governor got a lot of praise for how he was handling this. He did a shutdown before a lot of other states did. Now, these numbers started to rise, and we were really seeing it the last couple weeks. And when they were rising, the hospitals, for the first time, were really filling up at a large rate because in the beginning, for some reason, people were less symptomatic, and they didn't have to stay in the hospital. Well, that's not happening now because more people are getting diagnosed with it. Matter of fact, I think it's something like a 5-day wait even to get your results now in some places. So the governor has a primetime conference last week, primetime news conference, and he says, okay, he says, you, this is bad. We can't continue to do this. If the numbers don't go down by next Thursday, I'm going to have to possibly look at closing the bars, the restaurants, and the fitness centers again. Well, over the weekend, as you stated, clearly the numbers did not go down. And I think he realized that. So he came out yesterday and said, wait a second, I don't want to do a shutdown. So we're going to look at a slowdown, which nobody's sure what that means. We're going to find out today. But clearly there's an economic component in this that is very important to these states.
Well, here's the question, and I understand that. And the cure for this disease is an absolute, total, 100% shutdown across the United States for 3 weeks, which means no one can walk out of their home. Well, that's not possible, right, Scott? So let's forget about it. It's not going to work. What's the next best thing? The next best thing would be to pick those places, spreading places, places where people are more at risk because they're crowded in a small room. They stay there for long times. They talk loud in bars. They're puffing in gyms. And one could shut those places down or dramatically restrict the number of people there. My question to your listeners is, why are you waiting for the governor to protect your life when you have the power to save it yourself? What kind of a nut would go to a crowded bar in Ohio or California or New York or Nebraska or North Dakota or anywhere in this country this week? Don't do it. Now, what I have just suggested is a near shutdown, right? Now, you notice I didn't say don't go to the grocery, because my wife and I go to the grocery under very limited conditions. We patronize a grocery that allows only senior citizens. You got to be over 65 to get in before 8 in the morning. There's incredible distancing. No one is in there without a mask. They put their masks on before they get out of their cars. So we do that once or twice a week. We have deliveries where they put the groceries on our doorstep. And I say to your listeners now, that's what you should be doing. Don't take the risk of just throwing yourself in with the crowd, because the crowd is getting sick. And about 1.5% of those who got sick, that was 8,200 people in Ohio on Friday, 1.5% of them are going to die.
Well, and you think that would be enough, Doctor, but here we are going into Thanksgiving. Now, grocery stores are an interesting thing here, because the busiest day of the grocery store season is the day before Thanksgiving, and leading up to that, it's very busy. I was in a grocery store yesterday, and there is now somebody at the door who makes sure you have a mask on, but the place was packed, which tells me people are going to get together on Thanksgiving.
Right.
People just don't listen.
What can I say, Scott? I can tell you this. Here's what I can tell you. The odds are overwhelming that I and my wife and my daughter and son-in-law and my two grandchildren, maybe I better not speak for the grandchildren, the four of us are not going to get COVID. And the reason is that we have imposed our own very, very careful measures upon ourselves. All right, my wife and I have dinner at least once a week with my daughter and son-in-law. We do it safely distanced in the backyard, not in the house. Either our backyard or their backyard, and we don't sit 6 feet apart. We sit 10 feet apart. My son-in-law has to shout at me because I don't hear that well. But that's what we're doing. And so, you know, if someone listening right now decides to ignore the rules and get sick, don't blame the governor. Don't blame Trump. Blame yourself.
You know, Doctor, one thing, and I've noticed this in the last couple weeks as this has amped up even more than it already was, that people tend to hear what they want to hear, even people who are very serious about this disease. And the case that I'm noticing is with the masks. Now, local health departments have said, okay, the mask protects other people from you if you have the illness, but does not protect you from other people if they're not wearing it. And then Dr. Fauci comes on and says, well, that it does protect you some, and people who are serious about the masks took that as, yes, it is protecting me. What is the real story behind the masks here? Is it protecting me at all if I wear it, if the other person doesn't have it, or does it just protect other people from me?
No. It protects you as well.
Okay.
And the quality of the mask you wear significantly influences the amount of protection, which is why my wife and I only wear either the surgical masks. We tend not to do that because there's a shortage of them, and we want to save that for healthcare workers. But we have very thick, which means they're uncomfortable, double layer, actually triple layer. We have an extra insert in the front of the mask where we breathe. We wear triple layer masks. That makes them more uncomfortable, by the way. It's a little harder to breathe in and out through three layers, and especially when you're exercising vigorously. But we wear them, and we wear them to protect ourselves. I don't need to protect anybody. I don't have COVID. But you will never catch me without a mask outside my house. Does that answer your question?
It does. Now, so let me give you a situation here that a lot of people are in. Okay, I go to the grocery store. Let's say I know I don't have it. I don't have COVID. I put my mask on. I go to the grocery store. There's somebody in there who does have it, who is not wearing a mask, maybe because they have respiratory issues, or a kid who's a carrier. They don't make the very young children wear masks.
Right.
Okay, so I come in contact with them. If I have the mask on, am I okay?
Well, you're better than if you don't have the mask. I don't know why they don't make the young children wear it in California. You can't take a child into a market without a mask. Can't be done. They won't let the child in. I get so upset when someone talks to me about a maskless person in a market. It's illegal in California. Why do you allow it in Ohio? Why would anyone allow this? Oh, my goodness. Don't complain to me, Scott, when the cases keep going up in your state, because they're not going up that much in California. They are going up in L.A. County. They're talking about a curfew here in L.A. County. But in California, generally, they are not going up.
Well, that's been one of the interesting things behind this is that really the rules behind this are not laws, so people don't seem to be frightened of them, and you can go into a grocery store, and even if you don't have respiratory issues, if you're just a non-mask wearer, if you say you have a respiratory issue, the grocery store employee doesn't know anything, so you don't wear a mask, and it's very confusing.
You need to talk to a different expert, Scott. I'm an expert on medicine, and you need an expert on stupidity.
Well, but this is where we are, and I'm not sure. Is it just the fatigue? Is that really what this has all amounted to? People have to see that the hospitals are crowding, and it's taking 5 days to get results back. It's weird in a way.
There are three issues here, I think. One of them is that some people, they just don't trust what they're hearing anymore. And, of course, we are in a climate now that has politicized facts, actually ignores facts, doesn't care about facts. So there are some people out there who don't believe anything they're hearing. We have politicized the entire, I haven't politicized it. President Trump has politicized the entire COVID epidemic and all of the issues around it. And it's now become a sign of which side are you on when you wear a mask or not. I mean, that's just sheer craziness. I am on the side of survival. I want to survive. I wear a mask. I want to survive. Please wear your mask. And the third factor is something I charge up to stupidity. I won't use the word ignorance because ignorance suggests that there aren't facts and you don't know them. It's just stupidity. What else can we call that kind of behavior? So I avoid stupid people. When I see a stupid person, I go 18 feet around them, not six.
Doctor, I want to talk about the nuts and bolts of this illness, because I think sometimes we are overwhelmed. Not that we shouldn't know these things, but 6 feet away, wear a mask, numbers are going up. We hear that a lot. Now, the nuts and bolts of this thing, we don't hear a lot about. We hear asymptomatic, some people die, some people don't. What does this illness do that makes it so dangerous that the flu and pneumonia don't do?
That's a really good question, because there are three answers to that question. I'll give you the short form first. The first answer is we don't know everything it does, but it sure does a lot. The second answer to that question is it does things to your body that the flu never dreamed of doing. It affects your heart, it affects your brain. I saw an article yesterday, I actually have saved it, but I haven't read it yet, that it can affect your teeth. Now, don't ask me how that happens. But it affects people, by the way, who are even asymptomatic. They have done what we call functional MRIs on some people who had known cases of COVID but were asymptomatic, and they studied their heart and found signs of inflammation. Myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle. The long-term consequence of that is heart failure and death. The treatment for it is heart transplant. But we don't know if that's going to be the case with COVID because it hasn't been around long enough. And the third problem is that there's a new thing we're seeing. It's not new. They've been observing it for 2-3 months called long-haul COVID, which means that there appear to be a very significant number of people who, quotes, recover, end quotes, but they're not well. They're exhausted, they're fatigued, their brains are cloudy, they've lost energy, they are sleeping too much. We don't know what's going on. We have never ever seen a virus like this one, and we still do not fully understand the consequences. By the way, some people are taking comfort from the fact that the mortality rate, the death rate, has been going down. It's down about a third compared to what it was if you got infected at the beginning of this epidemic. And everybody's saying, oh, the treatment's getting better. That's accounting for a very small percentage of the decline in mortality rate. What's really accounting for it is the fact that older people are being better protected. So we have fewer older people getting the disease. 80-year-olds like me, right? Sorry, I'm not going out there. And as a result, it's an artificial drop in the mortality rate. There were 150,000 new cases of this disease in this country yesterday. Do you know what that means? That means with our current death rate of 1.5%, about 2,250 of those people are going to die 2 or 3 weeks from now.
What is there any rhyme or reason? Now, God forbid anybody is in that position to where they're on a road to death. God, we don't want that. But if you get a positive diagnosis, which a lot of people are right now, in Ohio, I think the number we're seeing is one in every 30 to 40 people are being diagnosed with it now. So if that's going on, and you're scared because you have the positive diagnosis, even though you feel fine, is there any rhyme or reason to the progression of this? Are you going to progress to where you can't breathe? When is it time to go to the hospital?
Well, the moment you feel ill is the time to call the doctor. And we're now able to manage, a lot of people just by interviewing them online, on the phone, and basically triaging them. Certainly, if you have any respiratory symptoms, any difficulty breathing, that is an emergency. That's not, have the doctor call me back when he or she gets in. That's an emergency, and one should treat it as such. But the reason I can't give you a rhyme and reason is because there appears to be an enormous amount of individuality to the way we react to this disease. So one five-year-old gets this disease and doesn't even seem to be sick, right? But can pass it on to granny, who could die. Another five-year-old in Texas yesterday died, and died after an illness of less than 48 hours duration. Go figure. We don't understand everything. We know that obesity increases your predilection for complications, and we kind of understand why. It's because fatty tissue tends to make inflammatory kinds of chemicals that go around the body. And the more fat you make, the more inflammation one might expect. But not all fat people die. We know that having lung disease or heart disease increases your risk of getting much, much sicker. We know that age is a factor. Your risk of dying if you get COVID increases 9% for every year of age. So if you compare me at 84 to a 34-year-old, I have a 450% greater chance of dying if I get sick than the 34-year-old. Almost five times more likely to die if I get sick, no matter what the doctors do.
Doctor, this is something I don't hear a whole lot being talked about. Now, when somebody gets sick, you know, we have cold and flu season. People get bronchitis. It's Ohio. They get it other places. But we have a change in weather here, and this is very common. Now, what I'm hearing is this is a breathing disease, especially somebody who has asthma, something, you know, predilections to having breathing issues. Now, it's my understanding that it's not a good idea to take ibuprofen or prednisone, which is a prescribed medicine, but a medicine that helps people who are having issues with breathing, possibly from bronchitis or other issues. Why is that? Do we know why this is not good for COVID, that it doesn't work in this situation?
Well, there's an irony with the steroids. These steroid drugs, like prednisone, reduce inflammation. So in some patients with COVID, where the problem is an overreaction of the immune system, this is particularly later in the disease, the immune system in some people, not everybody, just goes crazy and starts attacking even healthy tissues. In a case like that, the use of prednisone would be indicated. And I believe it was used when President Trump was treated. However, in a mild case, it may be wrong to use prednisone. And the reason for that is prednisone also suppresses the immune response. And at the beginning of this disease, what you want is a healthy immune response. You just don't want an overreaction by the immune system. So it's we're teetering on a balance, and we don't have a lot of control. There are so many questions. One of the people that President-elect Biden has appointed to his COVID council, at his advisory group, is a fellow named Mike Osterholm, a professor at the University of Minnesota, who is regarded as one of the world's experts on pandemics. And he wrote a book four years ago, and predicted everything that's happening today. And I love to hear him speak because he prefaces every single answer to a question with the following. He says, "I must remind you that we do not know what we do not know yet about this disease. It keeps surprising us every week."
I heard somebody say this last week, Dr. Uhlein, and I just want to get your reaction to this. Somebody said, you're more likely in 2020 to die in an auto accident than from COVID. What do you say to people who still have that attitude?
Yeah. So, and that's the group that I labeled as stupid. Yeah. You're right.
But what that attitude drives people not to wear masks, not to believe, and to make decisions that heretofore might not be good decisions.
No. Well, that attitude, because there was an attitude in the way you said it. Here's the way I take a sentence like that. I say, when someone says to me, you know, you're more likely to drive die in an auto, I say, well, that's why I drive so very carefully when I drive and still wear a mask. there's an old saying I used to love, which is that ignorance is temporary. It can be cured with facts and knowledge, but stupidity is forever.
You know, something I learned this past week, Dr. Uhlein, somebody who I know, who I have not been around, thank goodness, was diagnosed with this. And thank goodness, you know, I talked to him last night on the telephone, and so far it's been a mild case. But they ended up getting it because somebody, and they've been working from home, but somebody in their home, works outside of the home, got it, came home, there you go. Infected
there
everybody.
You go.
Yeah. So, how do you avoid something like that?
Well, if you, by the way, this is really good because it also gets to the CDC guidelines for Thanksgiving, which many people are criticizing as too lenient. If you've got someone in your home who is outside and has a risk of picking up the virus, and who can come back in your house and give it to you without even knowing he or she is sick, that would tell me we've got to be careful at home. Maybe even separate bedrooms. Maybe we eat our dinner outdoors. Maybe we're careful about the things we touch. Maybe we wash our hands more often. And this is going to be a particular problem at Thanksgiving because of all the kids coming home from college, right? They have been exposed to dozens of other people, any one of whom might have been infected. Kids are kids. We know that they don't mask and distance like we do, no matter how much we beg them. Although my two grandchildren who are coming home, one from college and one from work in New York City, have been told by their parents, if you're not taking precautions in the week before you come home, we'd rather you didn't come home. Don't expose us.
You know what this makes me think of, Dr. Uhlein, and I don't know if you remember this, but in the very beginning, and we ran the story because, you know, at that point you wanted something light. We didn't know what was really going on. There was a story when all these lockdowns happened in the beginning of this that more babies were going to be born later in this year, which is now, because people were home for the first time together in a long time. Now, we all got a chuckle out of that, I think, and we did the story, and, you know, that was that. Now,
right.
You know, this is a bad idea, I think. I think this, we're learning now that this is not a good idea. You know, if you're in the home with somebody and they're working outside of the home, maybe you need some distance. Maybe not, you know, baby time.
And you know what else we're about to learn?
What's that?
We're about to learn whether a baby born to a woman who was infected will be normal.
Really?
Well, let me ask you this. We've never had this virus before. We know that there are going to be thousands upon thousands of pregnant women who become infected during their pregnancy, right? It's impossible to avoid it with what's going on in the country. But do we know if their babies are affected by the virus? The answer is no. We don't know yet whether these babies will be affected or not. So if I were part of a young couple, I would be saying, this is not the time for us to get pregnant.
Okay, doctor. When you're in California, you can go outside and have Thanksgiving. In Ohio, a little difficult right now. It snowed here this morning. So, that being said, people want to get together, and we're not going to stop them all. We're just not. It's awful. It's terrible. We're not. So, what's the advice?
Well, I can tell you what my wife and I would do if we lived in Ohio. We would do a virtual Thanksgiving on Zoom. We would have our Thanksgiving. Our daughter and son-in-law, who live less than 5 miles away from us, would have their Thanksgiving at home with their two children. We would connect with our daughter and daughter-in-law and son in Hawaii and their two children, and all the grandchildren, two in New York and a couple of scattered elsewhere, the older grandchildren. We'd have a Zoom Thanksgiving, and we would schedule our 2020 Thanksgiving dinner together for 2022.
A second part to this, doctor, because I've heard this too, and hopefully, I don't know how much of this is going on, but people are suggesting that people go get heaters and try to have these outside. Is that good in cold and flu, COVID? You know, I don't know if you want to take grandma outside with a space heater.
I'm laughing because more than 2 weeks ago, I had our electrician out at the house. We have an outdoor area. He educated me about heating outdoor areas. I committed to purchase put in a 220-volt line, and we're going to have a 3,000-watt, very, very energy-efficient heater. And it is still not in because they've run out of heaters in the country. Everybody in the country had the same idea about a week before I did. Yes, it is a good idea to do that. It's a very good idea. We entertained friends, two friends. There were four of us seated 8 feet apart in our outdoor patio in 53-degree weather, which is really cold for California. We had blankets on everybody, but we didn't call it off. We were safe outdoors. There was a gentle cold breeze. We brought take-in food in separate containers, so we weren't serving communally, and we didn't have to get close together. You can do it. And this Saturday, we'll be Zooming with them. We've got to make some sacrifices if we want to stay alive. And literally, at the age of 84, it comes down to staying alive.
Doctor, I have a quick question here because I've wondered about this for a while, and I think a lot of people are going to do this on Thanksgiving, and they're still doing it in stores to a certain degree. Now, the idea of taking somebody's temperature to be an indication of if they might have this. Now, this confuses me. Not saying it's a bad idea, but if you are asymptomatic and you don't have a fever, or you just, you know, maybe have a runny nose or an upset stomach, but no fever, how much of this temperature taking is really helpful in this COVID fight?
Oh, it might catch an overt case or two. I don't feel any more reassured by the temperature taking. So when I go, and by the way, I did have to have a minor surgery. It was done as an outpatient in my doctor's office. They took my temperature. I just snickered to myself. They observe every precaution they can. But I felt no more protected because they took everyone's temperature than if they had not. I think you're very right to note that it doesn't contribute that much.
And
the equation.
And the final question, Doctor, whatever's going to happen is going to happen next Thursday. We've given people the information here. People are giving people the information all over this country. Where are we going to be first week of December?
Second week of December, we're going to see a massive surge, I think. We're going to see hospitals overwhelmed. We're going to see a lot of people sick. We're going to see the deaths go up, and then we're going to be dealing with the same issues for 6 months to a year.
What happens, because we're getting close with the hospitals right now, and it's not PPE. Our governor said this last week. It's not the PPE issue anymore. It's manpower and it's room. In the beginning, we talked about ventilators. We have to make a decision. Do we help a younger person rather than an older person? Okay, well, that's not the issue right now. The issue is we don't have people, we don't have room. What do people in the medical profession do in that situation?
Well, I'm sitting here looking at a headline from the New York Times, Monday, November 16th, business section. On the top headline on page one is, "Doctors are calling it quits." Doctors, some doctors just leaving the profession. That's it. They planned to work until they were 75. They're now 65, and they're looking at idiots who won't wear masks and come into their office sick, and they say, this is not for me. In Utah, where we have a second home, they haven't run out of beds yet. They think they will. They've run out of doctors. There's no one to take care of the patients. What are we going to do? I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know.
Is this a big possibility? Are we headed this direction?
Yes, I think we are headed this direction in this holiday winter season. I just pray that folks will get it, in quotes, get, and isolate themselves to protect themselves. They don't have to do it to protect me. Thank you. I'm taking very good care of myself. I don't have COVID. Do it to save your own life and the lives of the ones you love.
Dr. Art Uhlein, very, very important stuff here. Thank you so much for coming on this morning, and I'm sure we will be checking back with you, and thanks for getting up early and everything you've done during this pandemic and everything I know you'll continue to do. You stay well. Happy Thanksgiving, and we will talk again very soon.
Same to you, Scott. Stay safe.
Dr. Art Uhlein, there you go. Do with it what you will, and hopefully you will do the right thing. Don't forget, Voice of a People with Linda Sims today at 4, Adam the Computer Guy at 2, and Pastor Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker at 5. For this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
879050. It's now time for the obituary report on WWGH Radio.
Robert F. Williams, age 74, passed away on Saturday, November 14th at Marion General Hospital. He is survived by his wife, siblings, sister-in-law, nieces and nephews. Visitation will be on Monday 3rd at Marion First Free Will Baptist Church, 1449 Chrissinger Road.